Hello, Darling Rage Nation. This is your host, Molly, aka D-Rage. I am so excited to have you here for our latest installment of the Rad as Fuck Women series. Today, I am chatting with Abigail Pumphrey, who is one half of the amazing Think Creative Collective. She and her partner, Emily, have been teaching women how to run their business practically for the last few years and are just killing it. She'll tell you more when we really get going with this conversation, but we talked about Think Creative Collective as a business, how it started, where Abby came from in her life and her career, and what brought her to a place where she wanted to start a business to really enable women to be financially savvy, successful, badass business owners. And I'm really excited for you guys to hear this conversation. I've known Abby for a couple of years now on the internet. We've still not met face to face, but I'm really excited for that to happen hopefully soon. I just can't wait for you guys to hear this conversation with Abby. It's a really good one. So without further ado, here is Abigail Pumphrey. Hello.
Hey.
Hey, how are you, Abby?
I'm doing good.
Good. Thank you so much for being on my podcast.
Absolutely.
I'm super excited to talk about you.
Oh, well, yay.
Yay. So for the people who don't know you in our audience, would you mind just introducing yourself and kind of explaining what you do?
Sure. My name is Abigail Pumphrey. I live and grew up in Kansas City. I run one half of Think Creative Collective. We're an online business that teaches other online creative business owners how to grow and scale a profitable and sustainable business. We do that through a bunch of online courses, our Facebook community, our own podcast, and I'm sure there's more ways, but
that's so many ways.
5 second rundown.
Right. And you are also running another business as well, right?
Yeah. So I also have Simply Home, where I promote wellness and sell essential oils. So
So that's been cool to watch, like, both of those things grow in different ways.
Oh, yeah. They're definitely very different.
Yeah. So I'd love to know more about, like, the story of Abby. Like, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Sure. So when I was young, I had a bunch of different things I thought I was going to be. But the thing that I probably held on to the longest and really, really thought was going to happen, and this all goes back to my interest in wellness and nutrition. I wanted to be a bariatric surgeon and help obese people go through gastric bypass surgery.
Okay.
And I, long story short, did not go to medical school and ended up with a major in fine art. But that was where I thought my life was headed for a long time.
Yeah, well, and tell me more about, so what made the switch for you? Obviously, medical school is, like, a huge commitment and all that, but, like, was there, like, a come-to-Jesus moment or something where you were like, nope, don't want to do this, gonna try something else?
Yeah, so I worked at a hospital in high school for a little bit, one summer, and was in the dietetics department and was working on a bunch of research. And I think the biggest thing that kind of told me I shouldn't go down this path was just how much I disliked the research process. And though as a surgeon, that wasn't necessarily going to be what I would be doing, I knew for the next decade in medical school, I couldn't really avoid it.
Right.
So, and a lot of it was just the repetitive nature of it. It wasn't that I didn't find the studies I was working on interesting, like, it was super interesting. We were working on, this was before anybody knew anything about DHA, and so we were working on a study with DHA and breast milk and formula. We also, for brain development in infants, we also were working on a study related to omega-3s and their benefits to brain development. as well as just general health. And we also were working on a study related to alcoholism and whether it could be hereditary. And I loved the studies. I loved the information. I just didn't like doing the same thing over and over and over again. I wanted something a little bit different. Like, I remember going into the rat lab, which sounds super sexy, but it's not.
So sexy.
It's a giant room full of rat cages. And
I bet it smelled amazing.
Oh, it did. It totally did. And I would take a cage out and I would weigh the rat and I would weigh their water bottle and weigh their food and then fill it up and put them back. And I did that 200 times a day. And it just, you know,
yeah.
And granted, I was young and like I was doing the grunt work for sure. But
mm-hmm.
I just didn't like how slow of a process it was. And
right.
I need more immediate results. So I totally want to read all the overviews and how things went and all that jazz. But the actually doing all the micro tasks was not my thing.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So what was it about fine art that, because obviously like that's the opposite direction. Is that the reason that you went toward it?
I still really liked the technical aspect. So when I went to school, I really thought I was going to be a package designer.
Okay.
So I like my dream was to design cereal boxes, which sounds crazy, but like working being like Procter and was like ultimate, like I want to design the things that should sit on the shelves at Target, like all the packages and how they get put together. And what I didn't know at the time was I probably should have gone into industrial design, not
right.
graphic design. Though you can get a job in packaging and all of that jazz, I probably avoid the more technical side of industrial design.
Right. That's really interesting. So you wanted to design, I just love that you said you wanted to design like the cereal boxes. That's awesome. Was there any box in particular that was like your muse of cereal boxes?
I mean, I had cereal for breakfast like pretty much every day. And
mm-hmm.
instead of, you know, mom pouring cereal or me pouring cereal and putting it away, like I always remember it sitting on the counter and I would do the mazes on the back or
right.
Read it. Or, and I remember like studying the nutrition facts and like analyzing every little piece of it. And I don't know, something about cereal boxes.
There's just something about cereal boxes. I remember doing the same thing though, like having it, there were like a line of cereal boxes and whatever one you had, the cereal in your bowl, you were like looking at the back, wanting to like finish the mazes and all of that stuff.
Oh, totally.
I remember 90s kid stuff.
I know.
So then you got your degree in fine art and you worked in like the corporate world for a while, right? After that?
Yeah. So I spent some time kind of running the gamut between, I did the agency life and thought that was going to be for me, and then switched to nonprofit and worked in education and ended up at two different corporate jobs. One was like a multi-billion-dollar company, and then I worked at a startup before getting laid off for the second time and right. officially starting my own kind of thing.
Right. And then in the process of all of that, you ended up meeting Emily. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, when did you guys meet each other? Emily is your business partner.
Right. I met Emily online in the spring, summer of 2015, just a few months after I started my own online business.
Right. So then how did that like relationship between the two of you kind of transform the direction that you were taking in your life?
So I think it all was like very time specific. Nothing at the time was like, I'm going to change everything about what I do. Like, that was right. not necessarily the goal. So when I met Emily, I had my own online website and branding company, and she was running a photography business. And we partnered on a couple of things and loved collaborating. And a couple of months after we met, decided we really wanted to go into business together. And what then just started out as merging our services slowly transformed. And in January of 2016, we stopped taking clients and started focusing 100% on building our education company. So it didn't start out as an education company.
Right.
We just started out doing what we knew and like dabbled in other things and tried them. And when things worked, we worked harder on them. And some things, you know, at the time we thought were super successful. And now looking back, I'm like, that was so small.
Right. Well, I mean, it's been like such a crazy growing process. Because for people who don't know, Think Creative Collective is amazing. You all should go check it out, especially the Facebook group. It's awesome. But yeah, like I even remember like finding you guys probably not that long after you even started Think Creative Collective. And I got your first like big offering, I guess, at the time, which was Biz Chick Co-op, mm-hmm. which was like so similar and yet different from what you guys do now. And everything yeah. has like grown super fast, it feels like.
Oh yeah. No, I think, you know, the same ideas are still there. It's just tweaked and perfected a little bit. And mm-hmm. now my life is so incredibly different than it was then. Like I work way less. I make mm-hmm. way more. I mean, which is great. I mean,
yeah,
blessings, but
it took a lot of hard work to get there though.
Oh, 100%. I did not put in the hours. Like,
yeah, like crazy hours. Like you guys were doing like a blog post a day, every day for a really long time. Yep. I feel like. But I want to kind of dig into a little bit of like the last year and a half, because I know that you've had some personal struggles that have really like transformed your life in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if you'd be willing to talk about some of those and like the lessons that you've learned along the way.
Yeah. So I won't dwell on what happened too much, but I was in a massive car accident in 2016. And I got a wake-up call, and it wasn't that what happened to me or, I mean, a bunch of stuff happened. I mean, there was a slew of things that happened because of that very moment, mm-hmm. but I think the thing that really set me forward was I have to be in charge of my own life, and that wasn't just business, it was all of it. And I spent so long ignoring my health and well-being. I wasn't taking very good care of myself, and so even though I was hurt and in pain, I really started trying to focus on how I could balance, because I don't know, I really don't like the word balance, blend,
yeah, whatever. It's like a blend or like a dance or something, yeah,
between like making a living but also enjoying my life on outside and mm-hmm. getting back in shape and losing some weight. And you know, it wasn't all at once, but and it's still a process. Like by no means am I done, or will I be done anytime soon. But I don't know. I feel like it just sort of was the thing that catapulted this new process or this new way of life or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And how did that like, because you mentioned that whole wake-up call and everything that happened afterwards and, like, all of the health things. How did that change your perspective on, like, running your business? Because I know for a while, like, it just prevented you from, like, the way of being that you had been used to before, I guess, in a sense.
So a lot of my time was spent trying to delegate. I couldn't necessarily go full force into trying to take on all the things all at once. I didn't have the same amount of energy. I just was healing. And so, I mean, a lot of it was having other people take over certain aspects of my business that I was afraid to let go of. And some of that went incredibly well, and some of it I had to learn some lessons on, but letting go and not focusing so much on perfection, but good is good enough. And, it served us well. So.
Yeah. Well, and that whole like good is good enough thing is huge. Like you guys taught me that, and that's become a huge part of my philosophy in business, but also like in life, that perfection is never a thing, and chasing after it is just going to be a huge waste of your time. So just fail fast, like take actions and see what happens, kind of a thing.
Yes.
So, yeah, and yeah, so your journey has been really inspiring for me to see, just the fact that you didn't let that stop you, I guess, from continuing to go after the things that you wanted. And instead of giving up, you were like, okay, how can we make this work?
Yeah, I mean, never get in the way of a determined woman, so.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of women, since this whole podcast series is about just hearing the voices of lots of different women and celebrating women's voices in general, I'm wondering how women play into your business now, because I know that your why and Emily's why is tied directly to women and empowering of women. So I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, so our mission is really to change the economic landscape of women-owned businesses. And what I mean by that is there was a survey done a couple of years ago about small business owners and what they were doing in the US economy. And the trend we noticed was that specifically women-owned small businesses were not really affecting the overall economic playing field. So they weren't really making a dent. They weren't making very much money. And this is all generalization, but I mean, they weren't hiring. They just, it was just sad. Like, there's no reason when billions, if not trillions of dollars are changing hands all over the US that women can't have a good chunk of that pie. And so we wanted to help women stay in business. That was a big first step, was not shutting your doors after 6 months or changing their minds and pursuing something else. Like, we want them to be determined and keep moving forward. And then obviously increase revenue. But a big piece of it is also scale enough that you can hire and employ other people. That's a tall task. Like, that's a lot to expect of women who are not just running businesses, but running households and taking care of children and, being PTA president and helping in the community and running marathons and doing all these amazing things. Women are busy. And so it's, I know for some of them, work is their number one, but for a lot of them, it's not even close to the top of their priority list.
And that's really interesting to me. So, like, what do you think in your experience so far, once you guys really shifted and started focusing in on this purpose, what do you think is one of the biggest struggles or like roadblocks that women have when it comes to their businesses?
I think it really depends on people's individual situation. Everybody's a little bit different, but I think a common thread is support, whether that's people believing in them and supporting them in that, or financially. So I've seen a lot of women shut their doors or just give up because they had a spouse or a partner or a mom or even a child that said that what they were doing wasn't a real job. And that disheartens me to no end, because these women work their butts off and oftentimes go unnoticed. And so I think having a support system is massive. Now, I'm a big believer in having a debt-free business and not having to rely on other people financially to get off the ground. However, I think when you compare small women-owned businesses to men, I think in general, women are just doing with what they have, whereas not always, but a lot of times men seek funding. And because of that, they can grow and scale much faster. And whether they're profitable or not, it's almost irrelevant, because their revenue gets so much higher so much quicker, and they are able to hire. So sometimes, like, if you compare apples to apples, like, the profit may be exactly the same for a one woman show versus a guy's team of 12. But if you look at what they're affecting economy wise, despite the fact that profit is lower, they have 12 people that have families that are getting fed. And so I think funding in general is, it's just, A, women aren't seeking it as much, but B, they also aren't getting it as often. And not that every woman by any means needs to have a business that's like requires venture capital funding, but I think that it does definitely paint a different picture for their living room between naps and the guy bought a corporate.
Yeah, that's really interesting, thinking about even, you know, like how women function versus men and how that translates into business. I hadn't thought about it with the funding, but that's a really good point. And I wonder how, like, we can move that conversation forward to make, you know, cause women to think about that, but also, like, think about maybe new and creative ways that we can approach that as women, that uses our womanly superpowers to do it in a different way.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it is, it's not necessarily what they want, which is fine. Like, by no means am I requiring that of anyone. We haven't sought funding and have no plans up to, but it also took us 3 years to scale to where we are. So, and we still don't have full-time employees outside of Emily and I. Everybody else is a contractor. So, I don't want to sit here and be a hypocrite and say, go do this thing when I haven't done it. But I do think it would make a change much faster.
Yeah, absolutely. Is that something that you guys have talked about at all?
No, like, and we don't need the funding. And that's the thing. Like, we make enough and have things set in place that, like, revenue is not an issue. But you know, some people want to scale faster. I mean, with the way we do business, it doesn't necessarily make sense for us to hire this big team and increase profit margins when, I mean, yes, we want to scale, but like this, like beyond a multi-million dollar company, I mean, there's no reason why we should be a billion dollar business. Whereas I feel like some women have the product or the idea or the software, like the SaaS type business, where that makes sense. I just don't think, I mean, I guess we could, but I don't necessarily have the desire to grow it to that point.
Yeah, well, it's just an interesting conversation because I hadn't thought of it in that light. And it is so, it's so different, like you said, for every single woman, because every woman business owner has different reasons and different like trajectories for what will work for them. But you're definitely right. I think in a lot of cases with like maybe more of a product-based brand or software, that type of thing, like that's totally a possibility.
Right.
So, and it's interesting too, because it makes me think of just like in general with all of the women that I've talked to so far in this interview series, there's always this undertow of kind of like the never enough attitude where it's like our confidence level seems to be different in a lot of ways. Not necessarily that women aren't confident, but there's a lot of like imposter syndrome that shows up in a different way in women than men, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering if you've come up against that type of imposter syndrome in yourself and what that has translated into with your life and your business.
Yeah. So I think comparisonitis, especially as a woman, is unavoidable. Like, it happens at every stage of business, but just it's different at every stage of business. So when I was just starting out, I would look at other bloggers and see what they were doing and be totally blown away and flabbergasted by how they could put out so much content. And then when we grew to a point where content wasn't really an issue, like then I was looking at people that were putting out courses like nonstop and making all this passive income. And I thought, oh my gosh, how are they doing that? And then we got to a point where we were making money consistently from courses, and that wasn't what I was looking at anymore. And so I think it changes frequently. And it definitely sneaks in. But I think the thing that maybe has shifted for me over time was that I, for the first time in my life, feel like I deserve it.
That's huge.
And I think so many women just convince themselves that they can't have or live a certain way because they're not meant to, or they're not supposed to, or they grew up a certain way and so that's just how it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And I'm very convinced that that's not true, and won't let other people stand in my way when it comes to that, because I know that I deserve what I want, and I don't know, like I just don't question that anymore.
Yeah, hell yes. Well, and that's like something that's part of the conversation that I've been having with other women in the interviews too, is that the women who are finally at the place where they realize that they actually do have choices and agency over their own decisions and the course of their lives are the ones who are like starting to make moves and take action and realize that their life doesn't have to look like A, B, C, and D. They can choose something different.
Oh, 100%.
And that's crazy empowering. So we're going to wrap up in a few minutes. I just have two more questions for you. But what I do want to know is if you could give your younger self a piece of advice, and maybe like the audience as well, a piece of advice, what do you think it would be? What's been one of those things that's been really important advice for you in your life?
So I heard this quote recently and it really stuck with me. I don't know who they is anymore, but someone said that people drastically overestimate the amount they can accomplish in a year and drastically underestimate the amount they can accomplish in a lifetime. Hmm. And that really struck a chord with me, because I remember as a child, or even like high school age, like coming into young adulthood, and would talk to my mom about her career and what she had done and all the various things she had accomplished. And I remember, you know, sitting there and thinking to myself, if I ever do half as many cool things as she has, like I will have succeeded in life. And what I wish I had known then was, like, it just takes time, dear. Like, if you keep going after it and you keep pursuing, like, those accomplishments add up and those amazing things do happen. It's just not always on the timeline you anticipate. And, you know, that's a hard pill to swallow, but I am beyond impressed. Like, I don't have a resume currently, and I have no means to I have no reason to update it. Like, I'm not going anywhere. But if I were to actually put together and sit down and put stuff on paper of, like, this is what I've done and this is what I've accomplished, like, I would be super impressed with myself. Someone also, I heard this recently and I thought it was amazing and want to start doing it. And obviously I haven't started because I wouldn't be telling you about it otherwise.
Well, I'm excited now.
Someone created a book of wins.
Mm-hmm.
And so they started this as a child. So, like, things they accomplished in life and just, like, kept a journal of all of it. So, like, even things like I learned how to walk. Like, I mean, if you really think about it, like, how epic is that?
Absolutely.
And then I learned how to public speak, or I taught a class, or I mean, the things you do when you do them are huge. And I think we often forget about all these small little wins. And so, you know, start over, like, pretend you're just, like, looking back and forget everything you've ever thought about yourself and really think about at the time, what was a massively huge deal for you, and write it down and, like, continue to update it. Like, 'cause there's things 6 months ago that were huge that now I'm like, meh. But, like, then it was massive.
Right.
And then if you ever have a bad day, you just go read this book of all the awesome shit you did.
That is so good. I think we all, especially as women, could start doing that as a practice. Yeah. That's awesome. Book of Wins. I love it. Thank you so much, Abby. I have one more question for you. It'll be easy and maybe it'll be hard. But what is your favorite song right now?
Oh, gosh. Okay, so I used to listen to the radio all the time because I commuted and now I don't go anywhere. But I don't know, it may be cliche, but I would say T-Swift, Look What You Made Me Do.
Heck yes. Is there I love that entire album. Is there, like, a reason in particular behind that?
Well, when I heard it the first time, I actually hated it. Like, I thought it was the worst thing she had ever done. And as we all know, T-Swift can predict the future.
That's true.
And she knows what we need before we know we need it. Mm-hmm. And there was a few times over the last, I don't know, whenever since it came out, 6 months, a year ago, something like that, where you kind of just want to, like, yell it at somebody, like, look what you made me do. Like, in the same angry way she does.
Yes.
I can't think of any particular time, but it's definitely snuck in my vocabulary a time or two.
Well, yeah, it's actually interesting because I didn't particularly like it either, because when I heard it, I was like, oh, well, that sounds like you're taking responsibility off yourself and I don't like that. Like, but it's true, it's so, like, it's so cathartic. She can predict the future. And I feel like, especially for women such as ourselves, that album is so good. So yeah. I agree with you. Well, awesome. Thank you so much for coming on this podcast today, Abby. I really enjoyed chatting with you.
Yeah.
Well, I am hoping that you have a fantastic rest of your day.
You too.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Wasn't that conversation so good? Oh my goodness. They just keep on getting better and better. I cannot wait to share more with you babes next week. If you're enjoying the Darling Rage Nation podcast and this Rad as Fuck Women series that we've been doing, please be sure to go on iTunes or any other platform that you are listening to this on and leave a rating and review. If you leave a sweet review, I'm doing this thing where I'm going to start shouting you guys out. So if you leave a review on iTunes telling me how much you've been loving this interview series, I'm going to give you a shout out in the next couple of episodes. And I think that's just going to be a fun way to connect us and get the podcast a little more visible. So thank you so much for listening, babes. You guys are amazing. As always, you can come and hang out with me on Facebook, Darling Rage Creations, or on Instagram at The Darling Rage. Can't wait to see you there. Hope you have a fantastic remainder of your week. And as always, rage on, darlings.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.